Welcome to the Scuttlebutt Radio Program with your hosts, Tom Claxton and Cal Walters. Radio for veterans by veterans. To get on the line, call 343-0106 now. A show for veterans by veterans.
Good evening, and thank you for joining us on the Scuttlebutt Network radio program, the voice of the veterans, for the veterans on 106.5 FM and firing the shots heard around the world at scuttlebuttnetwork.com. You're on board with Cal Walters and Tom Claxton, both veterans of the United States Marine Corps, and we welcome you to the most important and entertaining show on the radio each week as we tackle the issues and concerns vital to the welfare of our nation's most neglected asset, the United States military veteran. And we have got an outstanding show coming up for you tonight, but we want to start by thanking some of the sponsors that help make the show possible.
We certainly do. We'd like to thank the battleship USS Alabama Memorial Park, Viva Medicare of Alabama, the law firm of Gardberg and Kimmerly, Ed's Seafood Shed, the official sponsor of Tom's Tirade, and the Serenity Funeral Homes and Gardens.
And, of course, you know, we're also happy to welcome Patriot Roofing, Stephen Farley,
are.
And
right.
his group and all that they do to help support our community. But we want to thank all of our sponsors. And, of course, you are great listeners. We could not do this without your support. So please let them know that you heard it on the Scuttlebutt. And SBN's all about giving our veterans a voice on the issues that are important to them. So you can always join in the discussion at 343-0106 or 866-983-2777. You can also check us out on the TuneIn app for your smartphone at FM Talk 106.5. And if you like to listen on demand, our regularly aired programs are available via podcast on most of the podcasting sites. Tom's Tirade is available via podcast on castbox.com. You can also check us out on Facebook. Follow me on Twitter. It's at Cal_SBN. And we've got a packed show for you tonight. So if we can't get to everything or you'd like more information on the topics of the day, you can always go to scuttlebuttnetwork.com and check out the stack there. And coming up later on SBN, we'll have Tom's Tirade on Who Will Guard the Guardians. It's a good one, very timely. You don't want to miss it. But first, we are privileged to be joined on SBN by a congressman from the 1st Congressional District of Alabama, Bradley Byrne. Congressman, welcome back to the Scuttlebutt Network.
Well, it's great to be back with y'all. I'm looking forward to this.
I understand you have had a fairly hectic day. It sounds like you've been running all over most of Baldwin County with your town hall meetings. What kind of response are you getting from folks?
Well, it's pretty much like a lot of my town halls. I will tell you what the number one topic is at nearly every town hall, and it's some issue or issues involving veterans or the VA administration. So, I mean, that's true whether it's this year or prior years. That's my number one topic.
Well, and it's always great to have you on here to be able to talk about it. Are you finding that you're having more calls and questions about the VA and benefits, or are those starting to level out? Is there any trend there?
I think that they've leveled out, but they've leveled out at a high level, which is not good. We continue to have problems that we work on for individual veterans throughout the district, whether it's going through this appeals process that is maddeningly long for so many people, or dealing with some of the problems we know continue to occur out there through the healthcare program. I did 2 weeks ago and meet with the new administrator over there in Biloxi, We were up in Monroeville yesterday at the clinic there talking to the folks from Montgomery that are responsible for that clinic. So we're pretty actively involved with these issues, but it doesn't surprise me at all when I go to a town hall and I don't give a speech. I just let people ask me questions or make comments, and a preponderance of what people want to talk about are veterans issues.
Well, that is certainly interesting. How you said you visited with leadership over in Biloxi. What's the tone over there?
Well, I think that they understand that they've had some issues in the past, and certainly we have communicated with them a lot about that. The new administrator acknowledged some of those issues and assured me that they were not going to allow that to continue. And one of the big topics of conversation over there was the timing of the opening of the outpatient clinic at Tillman's Corner. And we had a long conversation about that because the building's going to be completed and turned over to the VA by the end of the year, but the VA tells me it's going to take them 3 months to make the transition from the property on Spring Hill Avenue out to Tillman's Corner. And I was a little perplexed as to why it's taking them so long to do that. And they assured me that they're going to move it as fast as they can, but they have to calibrate equipment and all that. So we're going to stay on top of that because I want us in that new building and open and ready for services to our veterans as quickly as we can.
Well, and there are some challenges that come along with that transition. I believe the pharmacy at the location on Spring Hill is already closed, which is causing some problems for veterans in terms of getting their prescriptions. And we, in some of the conversations that we've had, most of the equipment that's going into that the new facility is supposed to be new. They're not supposed to be transferring anything, or the majority from is not coming from the old facility. So 3 months seems like a long time to be able to do that transition. But I'm certain they'll try to do it in a timely fashion. I'm certain you'll stay on them.
Absolutely. I mean, it is all going to be new equipment, and the way they've described it to me, and I'm not familiar with this type of equipment, so I don't know to question them, but a lot of this equipment, when you bring it in, you can't just plug it in the wall and turn it on. There's calibration, as I say. You've got to do training with the staff, et cetera. And I get that, and I told them I understand that, and I certainly don't want you to be using any of this until you're ready. But 3 months seems like an awful long time for them to do that. So they listened to what I had to say, and they said, well, we're going to try to make it go as fast as we possibly can. And I said, well, if you don't mind, I'm going to be sort of checking in with you and pushing you on that. Because the quicker we get in that building, the quicker we get everything set up so that we can take care of our veterans, obviously the better off everybody is.
Now, once the VA takes over the facility, in that three-month period, is the clinic on Spring Hill still going to be open and operational?
Yes, but I don't know whether they phase out and phase into the new building or how they're going to do it. And they weren't real clear about that with me, which leads me to believe they haven't really thought that through, and they're not really ready to answer that question. But that's the sort of thing that we will stay in very close touch with them about as we get closer and closer to the end of the year, because we know that if we let up on our advocacy, sometimes we don't always get the results we want. So we will stay on top of that as well.
Well, and the one thing they don't want is that group from the South Alabama Veterans Council knocking on their door.
No, they absolutely don't want that. And,
oh, no.
I think they know from past experience with me, they don't want me knocking on their door either.
Well, absolutely, because you will definitely keep their feet to the fire and keep the veterans in this area informed of what is going on. Now, you mentioned you made your way up to Monroeville. What did you encounter there?
Well, we've had a clinic there for some time. It's a pretty good clinic. It's very popular with people in that area. It's not run out of Biloxi. It's run out of the VA healthcare facility there in Montgomery. And so we met with a whole different set of management people there. They're using telemedicine there, which I've got to say I'm always a little skeptical about, but they actually showed it to me. I sat in the patient chair. They dialed up the doctor who happened to be in Atlanta, and they looked in my throat and my ear and sort of simulated what they would do with the veteran. And it worked pretty well, and they tell me that they've got really good feedback from the veterans of that area that are using it. So that opens up a much wider variety of things that they can do for those vets, because in a rural area like Monroeville, it's just so much you can offer there by having telemedicine available to them, they're able to open a much wider variety of things that they can do with the vets there. So that seems to be working. We are hearing good things from the veterans up there about that and everything up there in general. So seems like we got something working pretty well in Monroeville right now.
Well, that is a great advancement in technology. I know we've spoken with some of the leadership over in Biloxi, and they're saying they're trying to move in that direction as well. Again, we are talking with Congressman Bradley Byrne from the 1st Congressional District of Alabama. We will have more with the congressman on the other side of the break when we return to the Scuttlebutt Network.
Fighting soldiers from the sky, fearless men who jump and die, men who mean just what they say, the brave men of the Green Beret.
Check your trim set, check your elbow steering arm maneuver, dive up, there I go, a low transition, right turnout.
83, dive up there, 16, let's turn them up. It's Scuttlebutt Radio with your hosts, Tom Claxton and Cal Walters. Radio for veterans by veterans. To get on the line, call 343-0106 now.
And welcome back to the Scuttlebutt Network radio program, the voice of the veterans for the veterans, transmitting live on 106.5 FM and firing the shots heard around the world at scuttlebuttnetwork.com. And again, it is a privilege to be joined by Congressman Bradley Byrne. Bradley, again, thank you for joining us. And, you know, prior to the break, we were talking about veterans and the issues that veterans are facing and that you are helping them with. But we've recently had a fairly significant piece of legislation signed into law, and that's the National Defense Authorization Act. Give us some of the highlights on what's in the bill.
We have passed the National Defense Authorization Act to authorize what the military does every year since John Kennedy was in office. So it's a very important piece of legislation, and it has an enormous amount of detail in it. But one of the most important things that's in this year's bill is the authorization for the largest pay raise that our men and women in uniform have had in a long time. And it's way past due. It should have been done a long time ago. So I feel very strong about that, and I feel very good about that. We also continue what we started in last year's bill, which is the ramp up, the authorization for the ramp up for our national defense, both in readiness, but also in making sure that we have the right equipment out there for the men and women that are defending our country. Everything from helicopters to missiles to jets to total combat ships like the one we make in Mobile. So it's a continuation of what we intend to be a multi-year effort that we've worked on very closely with the Pentagon, with Secretary Mattis, and I think it's taken us in the right direction. Now, for us locally, those littoral combat ships that are made at Austell, those are critical. So we've authorized another 3 littoral combat ships for next year. But that will be the end of the littoral combat ship program. It takes several years for us to build it out. And we'll be transitioning after that into the next small surface combatant that will be a frigate or a transitional ship to the frigate.
Well, and that's, as you mentioned, with the LCS not being phased out, but at least the build-out is finished. It's the next question, or the big question, is where do we go from there? And there have been comments from both sides of that issue in terms of where to go. But the LCS, I think, has certainly proven to be a valuable asset as we continue to try to rebuild our Navy. Very quickly, you know, with all of the talk that we hear about acrimony on Capitol Hill, you passed this the NDAA well ahead of the deadline. How does that happen?
Well, first of all, the national news media, in my judgment, misrepresents what we're doing in Washington. We pass a lot of bills without acrimony, with large bipartisan majorities, and you just don't hear about it because they'd rather show you when we're fighting with one another. They think that gets them more viewers. So we pass big bills with big majorities more often than you think. This particular one, however, as I said earlier, is one we've passed every year since President Kennedy was in office. And it's because there is more of a bipartisan consensus on doing what we need to do for the military than just about anything else we do. So we do a lot of big bills anyway. This just happens to be the one that we know year after year after year we're going to get that bill done. And this year we were able to accelerate the timetable and get it done at the earliest it's been done in many, many years.
Well, and it is, it's nice for our men and women in uniform to know that that 2.6% pay increase is coming next year so that they can factor that in. You know, they have actually have budgets that they have to live on. So tell us a little bit about some of the regional developments, China, Russia, North Korea. What are you seeing there?
Well, we've got a better situation in North Korea than we had this time last year. They've stopped shooting off their missiles. There is some work that's being done between our country and there to get some remains back of our fallen that are still there in North Korea. We're not making as much progress as we'd like to make towards the talks, but at least we're talking, and we are making some of the smaller gains on the ground. But it's better for them not to be shooting off these missiles, because every time they shoot off a missile, they learn more and they increase the effectiveness of their program. So I think that's gotten some better there. We got a long way to go, but that's gotten better. As you know, the president has pulled us out of the agreement on Iran, and that is hurting Iran, by the way, economically and otherwise. We know that they increased their defense spending by 40% after we got into that agreement with them, which means they're taking the money that we allowed them to access as a result of that agreement, and they're putting it into their military, which is not good for us or our allies. It's certainly not good for those who are the victims of the terrorist organizations like Hamas and Hezbollah that they fund. The situation in general in the Middle East is more complicated than it's been, but we have a smaller footprint over there in the Middle East than we've had, and it continues to shrink. I personally think that we're getting to the point where it's time for us, and I agree with the president about this, to say it's time to get out of Syria, and we need to have a better timetable. That's pretty close to getting to where we need to talk about getting out of Iraq as well. A little concerned about mission creep in North Africa and the Sahel as these terrorists are being defeated in the Middle East. They're escaping there. But there are some important things we're doing there in a purely support role to help other countries do what they need to do to go after these terrorists. The big two are Russia and China. Russia continues to push out its naval operations and its air operations to places we haven't seen them since the Cold War. It's very troubling. They're doing some things that are very troubling. And we have to continue to invest in what we're doing to stay ahead of them. And we are doing that. Now, one important development is that President Trump authorized the sale of anti-tank missiles to the Ukrainian forces, not for us to fight for them, but for them to fight for themselves. So we're going to continue to have these problems with Russia, both in Eastern Europe, there in the Baltic Sea, and certainly down in the Black Sea. But I feel like we're in the right, with the right leadership and the right resources to push back on that. So the big problem is China. China is making ever-increasing investments in everything, but they're having a particular effect on their capabilities in space and with cyber warfare. And so we've got to do a much better job than we're doing in cyber and space. If you want to really hurt America, take out our satellites or use a cyber threat and, you know, and put our grid in a bad place. You could basically knock America out with a cyber attack on our grid. So China continues to worry me, and they're investing enormous amounts of money in making advances for their military, and we have got to make sure that we stay ahead of them.
That's very true. That they are also, you know, China has an increasing naval presence, not just in the South China Sea, but they're continuing to push outward in much the same way you mentioned Russia is. So there are some disturbing questions in terms of where we go with China. Can we bring them to the table to negotiate, so to speak, on peaceful terms? RIMPAC. Speaking of that, yeah. Speaking of that area, I know you attended the RIMPAC naval exercise last month. I know you didn't do any, probably didn't do any snapper fishing while you were over there, but give us some of your insights from the trip.
Well, you know, this I went 2 years ago. This is a naval exercise that occurs every 2 years. America leads it, but it's the largest naval exercise in the world. It's headquartered off Hawaii, but it takes place in the waters out there. I was the leader of a congressional delegation that went out there. We actually were able to go, and by the way, we rode on a Marine helicopter out to an Australian amphibious ship where we had a Marine platoon there with them. And we were really pleased to see the interoperability between the Australian forces and our U.S. Marines that were there. And the Marines loved it. They loved this ship. It's a really great, brand-new amphibious ship. They really enjoyed being on it. We also went out on a destroyer, one of our Aegis destroyers out there, and had a really good visit with them and spent a lot of time learning about what they do and how they do it. I got to meet with three sailors on that ship that are from my district, including one young sailor who's actually a midshipman at Annapolis. And I was so proud of those young people. They really were very impressive. We had a full briefing with the new commander out there, what's now called the Indo-Pacific Command. Very impressed with him and with everything he went through with us. You sit there in that briefing room that he's got, you look at that big old map of the Pacific, you realize just how big an area their AOR is that they have to deal with. But I am concerned based upon what he and others told us about what China's doing. You're right. Their naval presence is felt beyond just the South China Sea. They have designs on a bunch of islands. If I named it, you would say, wait a minute, those are all the islands that we paid a dear price for to take back from the Japanese in World War II. So the ambitions of the Chinese military, ambitions of their civilian leadership, are very worrisome to me. So as we increase the fleet, we'll continue to have the majority of the fleet there in that command, in the Indo-Pacific AOR. And we talked to them at length about what sort of ships that they need, what sort of armaments that they need, what authorization do they need from us. And we had a very constructive conversation that I thought got us way down the road in understanding what they need. We did get to go over to the Pacific Fleet headquarters. The best thing about that was that we got to see Admiral Nimitz's desk and some of the things that he used when that was his headquarters. But we had a great conversation with the admiral that runs the Pacific Fleet now and got a better understanding what his needs were. So, you know, it was a long time to get over there. It's a long flight over to Hawaii. But we really utilized our time well there, and I think everybody came away from there having a much clearer understanding of what we in Congress need to do to support them.
And speaking of readiness and support, you know, we over the last couple of years, we've had a number of collisions that involve some of our Navy destroyers. Do you get a sense with talking with the leadership that they are correcting those issues and making sure that our sailors are getting the training that they need?
Yes, I think they are. You know, we had some people in the chain of command that we've got new people in their positions. I won't go any further than that.
Okay.
And they've made some substantive changes to the training regime, what you're allowed to do if you haven't had a certain level of training, what sort of training you have to have before we allow you to do other things. So I think the Navy's taking all the right steps. But Congress has a role to play here. We have not been getting the funding out to them in the appropriate manner for them to be able to purchase the things that they need to purchase. And I sat in the room when we had the briefing, the initial briefing on the destroyer incidents a number of months ago, and the mother of one of the dead sailors was there. It was a very powerful moment. And I think we all looked at one another and said, look, when we have these funding fights up here in Washington, we need to understand it's a lot bigger than just a funding fight. We're putting young sailors, young Marines, young airmen, young soldiers at risk because we can't get our act together about how and when we get funding out there. So I really think that is a fundamental thing that we need to work on, and I do think that Congress is doing a better job with that because we do realize that we play an important role in this process just like the Navy does.
Outstanding. I know we're coming up on the time when you're going to have to leave us, but real quick, going from the Pacific down to the Gulf of Mexico, what are you looking at in terms of the red snapper season? How are we managing that, and how do you feel we're doing with that at a local level?
I think we're doing great. We really are doing great. We had Chris Oliver, who's the President Trump's appointee, to head the National Marine Fisheries Service in Mobile 2 weeks ago. The Dolphin Island Sea Lab and USA Marine Sciences Department took him out with all their scientists and all their scientific equipment. He fished. He got to go catch snapper. He saw how quickly we're catching snapper and how big they are. And he was blown away. He said, the science is superb. There are plenty of fish out here. He says, I got to take all this now that I've seen it and I know it to talk about how we can take it and further the program that we're doing. But I couldn't be prouder of our scientists. I couldn't be prouder of Chris Blankenship, who's the head of our State Department of Conservation. We've proven to the federal officials that we are good stewards of the fishery in the Gulf of Mexico, and I think we're getting closer and closer to the day when we get to control not just what we're going to do about red snapper, but also other species like amberjack and triggerfish. So I feel really good about where we are and where we're heading in the future.
Outstanding, outstanding. Well, we thank you for sharing all of the information with us that you have tonight. Real quick, football season's coming up. Are you going to be flying the colors up at the Capitol?
Well, I've had a really great time with my Georgia friends over the last several months. we've talked about whether there's going to be a rematch. So, and my Clemson friends as well. And, of course, my Auburn wife is mad because they're only ranked number 8, and she expects for them to be number 1, not Alabama. So one of the great things about living in our wonderful state is that we get to understand that while there are all these other important issues out there, you know, it's really all about college football.
There you go. Well, Congressman Bradley Byrne, we appreciate you joining us tonight. Thank you for all the hard work that you do for our veterans and the folks here in South Alabama. And don't be a stranger. You're always welcome to join us at any time.
Thanks very much. It's a great honor to serve our veterans.
Thank you, sir. Roll Tide.
There you go, starting that again. Thank you again, Congressman. Have a good one.
Good night.
All right.
Oh, well, I figured, you know, we had to end.
Why not?
Hey.
Hey. Go out on top.
There you go. Hey, you know, that's why you have to play all of the games and all four quarters in the game of the time.
Okay.
There you go. Hey, on the other side of the break, a new IG report from the VA casts a shadow on some veterans' claims. We'll talk about it when we return to the Scuttlebutt Network.
Claxton and Cal Walters. To get on the line, call 343-0106 now.
And welcome back, and thank you for joining us tonight on the Scuttlebutt Network radio program, a voice of the veterans for the veterans on 106.5 FM, firing the shots heard around the world at scuttlebuttnetwork.com. I'm Cal Walters here with Tom Claxton. We're glad that you've joined us to discuss the issues facing our veterans today. Our number's 343-0106 or 866-983-2777 to join in the discussion. You can also check us out on Facebook. You can follow me on Twitter. It's at Cal_SBN.
And we want to thank the folks that helped make this show possible. The battleship USS Alabama Memorial Park, our sea lawyer Colin Kimberly at the law firm of Garberg and Kimberly, Viva Medicare of Alabama, a Serenity Funeral Home and Gardens, and our new sponsor that will be on here with us in the next week or so is Patriot Roofing Company, Mr. Stephen Farley. Great guy.
Yep, absolutely. And we may have some more coming down the pipes.
So, yes, sir.
Lots of good things going on there. We appreciate their support, and we appreciate you supporting the sponsors that help support the show. And, you know, Tom, a lot of good information there from the congressman in a number of different areas. You know, I think many of the veterans in the area do have questions about how that transition from the clinic on Spring Hill out to Tillman's Corner is going to happen. And it sounds as though he's going to keep his finger on the pulse of it.
He said that he would, you know, and I had a chance to talk to him about it the other day. And he said that was, he didn't like the 3-month deal. Didn't understand, you know, he said it looks like they could open sections of it every week or so and get that moving there. But they said they had new equipment, they had to retrain their people. He said, but I'll be watching them.
Yeah, but, and it sounded as though the congressman really didn't get the answer he wanted when he talked to the folks. But, you know, my question is, if they're getting new equipment and they're going to have to train people on this equipment, how are they going to – how are you going to be able to staff the clinic down on Spring Hill while you're training people on new equipment?
Hello, yes.
How is that going to occur?
I didn't understand that either.
Or are you going to maybe cut out some of the services that you're going to offer at the clinic? Folks are going to have to go to Biloxi for a while while you're doing – this training.
I personally see it to be a real cluster, and the guys and gals that have been in service know what I'm talking about.
But that's the part that I
hope that it doesn't.
That's the part. It's gonna. I think once the clinic is up and running, you know, is fully operational, is staffed, is open, I think it will be a great improvement for the veterans in this area. The question is, how do you make that transition? You know, it's not like you're opening. It's not like you're closing a Domino's in one place and open flipping the lights on in another.
Next morning, yeah.
With all of the equipment and everything that they're saying they're going to have to do, there's going to have to be a certain amount of training just so that people know where their areas are and you know what their areas of responsibility are. Not to mention, you know, this training on new equipment. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out, and we'll try to keep in contact with the congressman to see what his take on it is along the way. Real quick, there's you and I, Tom, we followed the issue of sexual trauma in the military since it really became a hot topic back in 2011, and you've done tirades. We've looked at the numbers. Along the way. Now, you've got an Inspector General report, an IG report from the VA that is calling into question the process for claims being made by veterans for MST. And the IG report said that the VA wrongly denies benefits to thousands of veterans claiming they suffer from MST. The VA denied 5,500 of 12,000 claims submitted in the fiscal year 2017 by veterans who said they suffered from PTSD related to a sexual assault that occurred during their military service. And according to the findings, 1,300 claims denied during a 5-month period last year were rejected without due diligence by the VA. 740 of those cases, the VA incorrectly denied claims before requesting a medical examination. And I think the VA is trying to walk a fine line here in some ways. You know, we've talked with Colin about these types of claims and how they're filed and what sort of information you can bring to the table. But you have situations where this report says that you have representatives who don't have the experience or expertise to process the claims that are tasked with doing it, which seems – it almost seems like that old tried and true excuse from the VA that they don't have proper training.
Right.
And then some of it is that the language of, say, the medical examiner isn't what they're looking for. So the claims are being denied. They even went so far as to say that veteran service representatives overlooked evidence of possible stressors that could help prove sexual trauma, such as weight gain or job performance. So you're dealing with it, you know, it's like you're trying to herd cats when you're taking this claim, you know. You know what I mean? It's like, how do you, you know.
It just don't work, man.
It's difficult.
It is, yeah.
And I think probably the best thing to do, you know, it's a shameless plug, but if you're filing a claim like this based on the information in this report, get the proper representation with somebody like Colin,
right.
Because he's gonna be able to say, well, this needs to be spelled out, and you need
right.
to present this.
He's gonna know what to present and how to present it.
Yeah, and then of course, chances are, as Congressman Byrne said, you're probably still gonna get stuck in an appeals backlog at some point, mm-hmm. because they'll probably try to either shortchange you or deny it, and then you're into the backlog of appeals. So there's more on that story. In the stack, if you want details on that. On the other side of the break, Tom's tirade on who will guard the Guardians when we return to the Scuttlebutt Network.
Off we go into the wild blue yonder, climbing high into the sun. Here they come, zooming to me the thunder. Adam, boys, give her the gun.
Necessarily represent the views or opinions of this station, but they're coming around.
What is your major malfunction?
And now, the original pork-eating crusader,
Mr. Tom Claxton.
July the 26th, 1947. World War II was barely over and the Cold War was in full swing. President Harry S. Truman signs the National Security Act, which becomes one of the most important pieces of Cold War legislation. The act established much of the national security framework for the next 40-plus years of the Cold War, during which the United States and the Soviet Union, once allies in World War II, faced off as ideological enemies. As the magnitude of the Cold War increased, however, so too did the need for a more efficient and manageable foreign policy-making bureaucracy in the United States. The National Security Act was the solution. Among other things, the act created the Central Intelligence Agency from the ashes of the wartime Office of Strategic Services. It also established boundaries for the newly minted intelligence community, with the CIA in charge of intelligence gathering and covert operations on foreign soil, and the FBI, which was originally formed in 1908, tasked with domestic law enforcement. The CIA was to be our first guardian against those who would do us harm from abroad. This new community also included the intelligence divisions of each of the branches of the military, the oft-joked about military intelligence community. The CIA and FBI boast of many accomplishments, some openly and some that cannot be announced. They have had their share of failures as well, including the spectacular failure of the CIA and the disastrous Bay of Pigs invasion in 1961, in which Cuban refugees were unleashed against the communist regime of Fidel Castro. The mission was a disaster, with most of the attackers either killed or captured in a short time. In the wake of Watergate, the intelligence community came under scrutiny. Watergate shocked the American public and spurred many of its representatives in Congress to demand an investigation into the past activities of the FBI, CIA, and others. The result was the creation of two congressional committees in 1975, chaired by Frank Church, a Democrat from Idaho, in the Senate, and Otis Pike, a New York Democrat, in the House of Representatives. Their hearings exposed secret, arguably illegal, wiretapping, bugging, and harassment of American citizens, including Supreme Court justices, reporters, and government officials, all in the name of collecting intelligence about threats to national security. Does that sound familiar? The most notorious case, first exposed in the 1960s and fully documented by the Church Committee, was the wiretapping of Martin Luther King Jr. by the NSA and by the FBI under J. Edgar Hoover, who believed him to be part of a communist conspiracy. The committee's investigations included calling for testimony from the head of the CIA at the time, William Colby. The church committee eventually revealed so much sensitive information about U.S. covert operations that President Gerald Ford finally called Church and asked him in the name of national security to stop the release of sensitive information. In fact, the committees were largely political in nature and aimed at vilifying the Republican government left in tatters by Richard Nixon and capitalizing on the anti-establishment movement coming out of the Summer of Love, the shootings at Kent State, the Vietnam War, and the Woodstock. Notwithstanding Church's and Pike's partisanship and desire to grandstand, their committees did introduce checks upon the perceived adventurism of the CIA, NSA, and other agencies, although in hindsight, their efforts did much to neuter our intelligence gathering for years, with no lack of assistance from pacifist President Jimmy Carter. One interesting detail, the Church Committee's investigation also led to passage of Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, or FISA, court in 1978. The FISA court was originally designed to guard executive branch surveillance programs from the public while ensuring the other branches of government could oversee activities. Of course, as we now know, the Obama administration weaponized the intelligence community in a way not seen since the heydays of the pantyhosed PI, J. Edgar Hoover. As we have learned since the election of 2016, the intelligence community under Obama, including the FBI and the NSA, were actively used to monitor political rivals, specifically Donald Trump, in an apparent effort to either undermine his campaign or sow the seeds of discord in order to delegitimize his presidency. Ironically, while William Casey pledged to cooperate fully with Congress during the Church and Pike Committee hearings, the current leaders at the FBI and the DOJ are apparently doing everything they can to obstruct the lawful, and I repeat, lawful, duty to conduct oversight on the organizations that they in fact created. These actions by those in power at these institutions are reprehensible and a slap in the face to the good men and women who work to protect our nation from those who would do us harm, both foreign and domestic. Their actions demand that we again ask the question that was originally posed by the Roman poet Juvenal, quis custodiat ipsos custodes, the Latin phrase, who will guard the guardians? The reality is that unless Congress is able to wrestle power back from the entrenched bureaucrats in the FBI, the DOJ, and others, we stand to lose our Constitution and our Republic. And it will be up to red-blooded patriots and veterans to take back what progressive politicians have taken. For the Scuttlebutt Network, this is Tom Claxton.
Where's your drill sergeant, man?
Hold up, sir!
Understand that you men completed your training on your own?
That's the fact, Jack!
That's the fact, Jack!
These are exactly the kind of men I want working on the Scuttlebutt Network.
And welcome back to the Scuttlebutt Network radio program, a voice of the veterans for the veterans on 106.5 FM, streaming live at scuttlebuttnetwork.com. Along with Tom Claxton, I'm Cal Walters, a couple old Marines with just a little bit to say, the First Amendment right to say it, and the fighting spirit to keep it in, the tirade, even though we've run it before, is just as applicable now. And it's a question that tend to get more and more in the news media of asking, you know, who's going to actually take a look at these organizations that are supposed to be taking care of us. So we'll continue to keep an eye on that. You know, at the end of our program each week, we play Taps, and it's as much for those of you from older generations. You may remember when the television actually went off, you know, and they'd start in the morning with the national anthem, and they would finish with Taps. And it's sort of a throwback to that, but it also is there to remember those that have fallen along the way, our fellow brothers and sisters that are no longer with us. And we will be laying one of those to rest tomorrow. Larry Kent, many of you may have known him. He's a Marine veteran who passed away Sunday after a lengthy battle with multiple myeloma. He was very active in the chamber in the Tillman's Corner of the Southwest, right. Mobile County Chamber. Also, he was active in the Marine Corps League, had a fantastic family, and certainly he will be missed. I know there was a wake that was scheduled this evening. I think you went, Tom.
It was there, yes. We had it this afternoon, Mobile Memorial Gardens. in the morning at 10 a.m., the services will be held there as well in the chapel at Mobile Memorial Gardens Funeral Home. And then internment will follow with Dr. David Gill officiating in the chapel. And it will be, the burial will actually be in the Alabama State Veterans Memorial Cemetery in Spanish Fort at 12:30 p.m.
Okay. So, yes, and just in lieu of flowers, they're asking to make donations to the University of South Alabama Children's and Women's Hospital Larry Kent Memorial. So he is up there guarding the streets of heaven and doing a fine job. He was always there when to help anybody at any time. And so we are certainly keeping him and his family in our prayers here on SBN.
Have a new star in the sky looking down on us.
That's going to bring us to the close of this edition of the Scuttlebutt Network radio program, the voice of the veterans for the veterans. We thank you for joining us. Hope that you will join us again soon. Until then, please keep our warriors in your prayers, especially those in harm's way. God be with them and their families. God bless America. Remember, hero is not a four-letter word. We'll catch you on the other side.
Hoorah. Rest in peace, Larry.